oh, this guy right here who literally serves no other purpose, he allows these guys to advance and charge.
To the FTN show.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Red Powell.
Hello.
Adam Camilleri.
Afternoon, evening, whatever you are, whatever you're doing. Hello.
And joining us again is TJ Lanigan.
Hey!
Gentlemen, thank you all very much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We are the Battle Lost Souls podcast. I want to talk about chaos. I want to talk about demons. I want to talk about chaos space marines. There seems to be a lot of action out there where people are winning some games with the Chaos faction.
Yeah, definitely. It's an exciting time to be a Chaos player, I would tell you. Tons of fun builds, different play styles, and it's pretty open as far as list building mechanics and stuff like that going on.
It's pretty neat. In the White Dwarf this month, there's also a big faction or a big focus on painting Chaos Demons, Tzeentch. And I know we talked about Tzeentch and how Tzeentch, I think, is probably the they're struggling right now.
They're probably second place. No, they're probably third place now. I think Slaanesh, with the Keepers and the Exalted stuff, really gives a lot of strength, a lot of headway.
On the Demon side of the street, they're not doing horrifically on the Demon side, but on the Chaos Space Marine side, there's just not much there.
No one runs Mark of Tzeentch on any of your models. Mm. But then again, on the other side, you really only run two marks, right? You either mark Nurgle or you're marking yourselves as Slaanesh. Those are really the only two. So
we'll talk a little bit about the tips. This White Dwarf is chock full of paint splatter stuff. That's one of the things. If you haven't checked out the new magazine or the way they've been republishing them in the last year or so, chock full of paint stuff. This has a lot of demon stuff in it, and I think it'd be cool to talk about later on in the episode after we talked about what you should take and how you're probably not tanking pink horrors, but yet if you do want to paint them up, sweet, you're gonna have a recipe.
Well, funny story. I have a list of pink.
Oh, really? Okay. So you have been playing recently, and I think the last time we had you on, we were talking about the combo of how Nurgle and Tzeentch get along on the tabletop. Not in the stars, not in the warp.
Yeah. I don't run, actually, my new list runs no Tzeentch. It's actually just mono Nurgle. It's the Nurgle side is so strong right now that like you can just run mono Nurgle. It's actually pretty exciting to be a Nurgle player.
Do you mind telling us what you're taking?
It's not secret. I mean, I've run the last six tournaments with basically the same, like a very small tweaks to the original list. But basically the original list is something in the ballpark of like Poxbringer, which is the Nurgle Herald. Then I take lots of Nurglings, like a ton of Nurglings. And they're amazing for a whole bunch of different reasons. They're difficult to kill. They start on objectives. It's probably the big one. You know, the new strat brings Nurglings back from the dead, which is, whoever wrote that needs like a medal.
Sounds pretty annoying.
It's pretty. It's at the end of any phase. You spend one CP, and on a 5+, any models that were destroyed during that turn, you basically get to roll for them, and on a 5+, they come back at full wounds. By the way, just you know, in case you're wondering,
Necron reanimate.
Yeah, it's super, super strong. But so a lot of Nurglings. I run a variation of different squad sizes, some to basically screen out for my opponent, because if you play less than five models in your squad, you're able to string them out and not have to worry about the coherency rules. So those are really nice for like blocking the middle of your deployment zone. And then I usually put 2 8-mans in the front and then 2 8-mans in the back. We take 6 full squads because those are always fun. But yeah, I take 3 Plagueburst Crawlers because Plagueburst Crawlers are probably the best vehicle in the game right now.
They haven't been good though since they've come out. I mean, I know they've had different.
I know they've of, always been good.
I guess fashion, you know, but they've always.
I mean, I ran them at LVO and people were like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Just wait." And then like we played and they were like, "Oh, these are really good." And I'm like, "Yeah, nobody takes them." But then in the beginning of 9th edition, or sorry, the tail end of 8th edition, when like we got the new book, everyone was like, "Nah, I don't like Plagueburst Crawlers. Aren't good. Like it's all spawn and marines." And I was like, "Plagueburst Crawlers with a 4+ invul, and now they don't suffer the penalty to move and shoot.
yeah, if you weren't taking them before, you should be taking them now. So,
and they look cool. I mean,
they look awesome. Such a cool model.
You need a tad bit of luck with them. I mean, I think you just need just to, but if you have the slightest bit of luck, then they seem unbalanced. They seem broken.
I mean, then, like I said, without suffering the penalties now, like when you're rerolling ones to hit, each Plagueburst Crawler basically hits, it gets four shots apiece with the mortar, which is what you're really, that's really what's doing the damage. And then you should hit, each one should hit two times. Every other one should hit an additional time because you're rerolling ones. So you're basically, with two Plagueburst Crawlers, you're hitting like five times. And then with Arch Contaminator, you basically wound all five times. And then the other tank's going to wound another two times. If you get seven wounds through at negative two, you're just picking up small five-mans, no problem. Outrider squads, you can put some damage on tanks pretty easily because it is negative two. So, and then you have some sluggers just from extra poke damage. And then obviously the flamers are just ridiculously good.
I like what you said there. The small squads, especially, like, we know people are going to be playing Marines. Marines are awesome. They're very strong. The new units are, I mean, they're pretty cool. I actually used two units of Outriders in a game I played this past weekend. And I found some holes, you know, of what they can and can't do for sure. But they can do a lot depending on what chapter you're taking them. And so people are going to be using them. So anything that does, has an effective way of picking up a tough three-man to five-man squad, you should consider for your army.
Yeah, plus indirect, right? Like, what else in the Chaos Army has indirect? Just the Scorpius. That's literally the only other thing. So, like, I'll take this thing, which is just, it synergizes so well with the rest of the list, which I'll get into in a second. So, basically, we take three of those tanks, and then we take two Foul Blight Spawn, which are the probably the best unit in the Death Guard book. Those Flamers are move advance. Now, with the increased range, you can increase the Flamer another 6 inches, makes them just terrifying. And now with the strat, if you really need something to die, you roll three dice on the strength, two dice on the number of shots, pick the highest combination of those two dice. And then with Arch Contaminator, you get full rerolls as well. So, I mean, like, you're going to kill what you shoot at, generally.
You mentioned using burning some strats and stuff. And that's one of the cool things about this edition is that you actually can do that, and you can do it more than once. Whereas you would struggle to have all those CPs in eighth. Well, I mean, what you just said, you do all this stuff, but then you just get to, you either do it once or you have to question whether or not it's the right thing to do at the time or whatever. But now I think it's a little bit more freedom pulling that stuff off.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the list, the cool thing about this, the Nurgle side of it, is the list is so durable, you don't need to spend strats. You're not spending CP on things. You don't need to do a lot of things to make the list work. Like, I don't know a lot of the lists that remove 40 Nurgling bases off the table in the first three turns. And generally, the first three turns is like when you're scoring your points. So, like, turn two, you score your 15. Turn three, you score your 15. You know, now you really only need to get, you know, 15 points in two turns. Even if they start shooting you off of it, your tank should be up there to support that last objective. So if you score 10 for the last turn, and then if you, I don't know, they killed all three tanks, which I've never seen that happen before, then you still could get your back objective, get your last five, and still get your 45. And you'd be hard-pressed for your opponent to score their 45 unless they're really putting, you know, the nails to you. So that was the original list. And it's gone through some iterations. The new iteration, I think, is probably my favorite so far. Basically, we take one Poxbringer. We took Epidemius for the tally, and then one Great Unclean One, and he is a monster.
Which variant are you running with the Great Unclean One?
We take Sword, and we take Flail, and then we take the Relic Flail.
Oh, really? The Great Unclean One? So oh, I did a review of the Demon's Psychic Awakening. We thought the Grand Clean was the weakest of the Greater Demon Slings because you couldn't hide him, and his Exalted Gifts weren't the best. The relics were legit, and I guess the defensive profiles are right, but it's only really Revolting Resilient that makes an excuse in the Exalted traits. Yeah? Or is there another one you're looking at?
No, he takes the four on Feel No Pain.
And yeah, for sure, yeah.
He takes the damage, the higher damage flail. So basically with him is like, when you look at the list, he works in this particular list. I'm not saying he's the most amazing thing ever. I do take a Piper with him. The Piper makes him probably 20 to 30% better at what he does normally. So the Piper, for everyone who doesn't play the Sloppity Bob Piper, what he allows them to do is you can advance and charge with the Great Unclean One. So now the guy is moving
8 inches with the tally up, which is a 3 on the tally, which is not that bad. So 8 inches with the tally plus a D6, and then he can still charge in the same turn. So he's moving like 15 to 16 inches a turn, you know, charging what he wants to charge.
That is an impressive ball of slime.
Right, so like he starts basically on the line 10 inches, then you're going to move and advance him. He probably rolls, I don't know, 3 or 4 on the first roll, so he moves 10 inches up. So if he started 10 inches up, he's now 20 inches, which is basically the middle of the table. Then on turn two, if he does the exact same thing, rolls a 3, the tally should be up. You know, maybe the tally's up, maybe the tally's not up. Maybe he moves 7 plus his D6 again, moves another 10 inches. You're now 30 inches wherever you want it to be, and there's a lot of units that, you know, they have to come for these objectives. He can basically do whatever he wants. So, and he's just a very annoying character for someone to deal with, right? Because when you look at the list, you're like, okay, so I've got Nurglings, right? Nurglings are multi-damage. I need multi-damage. Bolters don't do anything to them. And one wound attacks just don't do it, right? They're just not going to pull models off the base. Like a unit of bolters firing like 30 shots, you wound like 20 times. Well, 20 of those guys, you're going to pass basically 6 of those on your invuls. So you bring that number down, you know, to 14, and then you're going to pass another 5 on Field of Pains. So you're basically only taking like 2 bases off. That's not enough. That's not going to pull a squad off an objective. So now you need multi-damage, right? So you're like, okay, so my multi-damage units, if you're taking a well-bounded rounded list, you're going to take multi-damage for the Nurglings, but then you're like, okay, so what do I do with the Plague Burst Crawlers? Okay, well, I probably have a Grav Pod. I'm probably thinking Space Marines, right? Well, the Grav Pods get screened out by the Nurglings, so you're not getting the Grav Pod basically anywhere near that those Plague Burst Crawlers until the buffs are on them. That's bad. Or, like, you're not getting them there until they've done significant damage to your army that's on the field. Like, the mortars have fired for 2 turns straight, and they're basically wiping units off the table that you were trying to grab objectives with. So you're like, okay, but that's... And then even when the Grav Pod comes down, it takes out 1 tank, maybe. Mm. Right?
I was about to say, like, in a lot of circumstances, you'd be happy to bait out their Grav Pod for one of your tanks, yeah? Just to get it on the board, maybe be able to exploit the drop pod.
Yeah, their whole strategy for a 180-point tank or whatever that you just had to sacrifice.
Yeah, so... They do that, right? That's their, okay, that's my anti-tank that I take in a normal list. That's going to take care of the Playbush Crawler. And then you're like, okay, what do I do with Tubby? Like, he doesn't care about grab weapons. They don't do anything to him. He's got a 4-up Film of Pain. He's got a healing spell on him, so he basically either heals them or the tanks every turn. And I need something else to deal with him. Well, multi-damage would deal with him as well, maybe. 4-up Feel No Pain is really annoying. I mean, you could, and then once you reroll ones on your Feel No Pain, you just stop shooting at him. It's just, you're not going to kill him. But so, like, it's just this list of like really bad things for you to shoot at the whole game. You're like, I really don't want to have to waste a rocket launcher on a Nurgling, but if I don't, I won't kill it. Or like, I don't want to have to waste a unit of Eradicators basically on 1 squad of Nurglings, and I still don't kill the squad of Nurglings. Okay, cool.
I was just imagining sending someone over with a thunder hammer on the great and clean one. And I just thought, man, that would the mess that would make, you know, if it was in real life. I was like, I don't even want to do that.
it's pretty funny though. So like, I'll have, and then you know what I do with him is I have a flamer guy babysit that guy. So like, if you try to go into a great and clean one, you're attacking last, and the great and clean one will kill basically whatever gets in combat with him. I mean, he's 7 attacks when the tally's up, 6 attacks with the Bile Piper, 6 attacks, hits on 2s, wounds on 2s, rerolls the wound, neg 3, D6 damage a pop, okay? And then he's got Nurglings on him, and then he's got the flail, which he can then shoot into combat. And that flail is strength 10 when the tally's up, or strength 9, hitting on 3s, rerolling 1s, and then wounding basically on 2s. Or 3s, and it's neg 3, and it also does 2 damage, and the damage spills over.
So, are you taking this Grand Clean one instead of a Keeper or a Lord of Chains, or in addition?
No Lord's Changes. There's no. It's all Nurgle, baby. It's all.
Oh yeah, all Nurgle all the time. Well, I'm happy to hear that. I'm like, the Greater Demon discussion seems to have been dominated so much by the Keeper, and admittedly, that's because the Keeper was so forgettable and is now so terrifying.
Yeah. Well, is that because it's hard to kill? I mean, what's the Keeper doing?
It's just really fast. So basically,
fast and shred. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like
if you get the Warlord, if you take in the Warlord, like basically your Warlord's moving like 15 inches plus a run and gets the charge on that turn as well because you're using all Slaanesh. And then she does a ridiculous amount of attacks to combat, and then she heals, and then you have your exalted traits on top of that, which can either give them give her a 4+ invul or -1 to wound. So like they're fun. The only issue with the Keeper list, you can't play out of it, right? Like if you get no hard counter, it's a hard counter. There's no way to play out of it.
It only does what it does.
It's just like it's Monster Mash. Monster Mash has always been, since its inception, you either can answer this or you can't answer this. You can't answer this.
Just for so we don't get too deep into terms or whatever. Monster Mash, were you referring to that? Is that Bash Brothers? Is it?
Yeah. Any Monster Mash.
Big models like Martyrion.
Yeah. Magnus. Apologize. Yeah, in the old days, it was like Carnifex spam. You basically run a whole bunch of Carnifexes run across the table, and your opponent either had the way to deal with it. This is like 5th and 4th edition. You either had the way to deal with it, they didn't. And then in 5th edition, it went to – because we didn't have big models yet in Chaos. And then in 5th and 6th, it went to like your Endurance, Toughness 9 – 3 Turvagon list with like Tyrants and a Swarm Lord. That was that Monster Mash list. And then finally, Chaos and Demons got their own, which has been in the form of that Chaos Space. I can't think of the name of that vehicle that people run in 3 of.
The Defiler? Discords?
No, the big thing.
Soul Grinder.
Lord of Skulls.
Yeah, that's the one. Thank you. Yeah, the Lord of Skulls was the next, big monster. Big Monster Mash list. You ran 3 of those across the table with maybe a Disco Lord and Lord Discordian running around doing stuff with the Demon Prince. And that was kind of how that list worked. And then you had your Magnus, Mortarion, and like 2 Knights. And that was the other Monster Mash list that's been out for now. So now you've got the Keeper list, which is like triple Keeper of Secrets and maybe a Demon Prince and like a Contorted Epitome. And you basically just kind of run around and you just punch things. So it's always been fun. It's a very fun list, and it has a lot of power. 9 times out of 10, you just sheer brute force your way out of it. But there's just certain matchups where, like I said, you hit a wall, and that wall is just insurmountable. There's no way you can deal with it. So, and I'm a very tactical player. That's why I'm not particularly fond of those types of lists. Like even when I saw the success with like the Lord of Skulls list, I was like, yeah, those are fun. But what happens when you play, X, Y, and Z list? It's just not. It's not
they're extreme end up well. Gatekeeper list. And what I mean by that is that they'll dominate the middle tables at a tournament.
Oh yeah. And they might win a tournament here or a tournament there because they get the proper matchup or they get the proper dice roll where they go first. A Keeper list is extremely terrifying when it goes first. If it doesn't go first and your opponent has sufficient firepower, they could kill one on turn 1 and then you don't get the charge off on turn 2 and then they kill another one on their turn 2. I'm sorry, on your turn 1, you don't get the charge off. On their turn 2, they kill another one and then you get into combat and then he just kills the last one. Once the 3 keepers are down, that's the list. That's all the firepower because the rest has to be stuff that holds the objectives. So But the Grand Unclean one really works well on the list. And the other, the other cool thing about the all Nurgle list is the damage locus, loci. So like your Plague Burst Crawlers giving extra damage every time they roll a 6 to wound with full rerolls is super strong. Makes your mortars sufficiently better.
I mean, anytime Nurgle's doing good, I'm feeling better about it. It's very encouraging.
They just synergize. The list synergizes really well. So, like the Plague Burst Crawlers are demons. So the Epidemius Tally works every time they get a kill. So like Toughness 9 Plague Burst Crawlers are terrifying. Toughness 9 Plague Burst Crawlers that basically reroll their ones on their Feel No Pain and then get healed every turn by a spell. Seems pretty good. And then they get a board-wide reroll one, so now all your Nurglings. The coolest thing with them is like this cool stuff you can combo out. So basically, like I killed a full unit of aggressors with 8 Nurglings the last time I played.
So it's like eight
Nurglings, right? And then you have the Piper next to you, so he gives them +1 attack as well as the Grand Unclean one. So and they get advanced and charge. So like I moved off an objective because it was like turn 4 or something like that. I already capped out my points, so I moved off an objective, advanced them, then they were able to charge. So the Piper's there, he gives them +1 attack. The Tally was up, they get +1 attack. So now they start with 4,
Piper gives him 5. The tally gives him 6. So 6 attacks. Then I cast a spell and I make them +1 to wound. Well, the tally's up, so they get +1 strength as well, and they get to reroll 1s. So it looks something like this. So it's basically you got like 48 attacks that hit on 4s, reroll 1s. And since the Piper is in the list, he does the extra damage on 6s to anybody that's within range of him. So the Nurglings. So they hit on 4s, they wound at +1. They're already with a herald around them. They're strength 4. So +1 to wound means I'm wounding aggressors on 3s. And then I'm rerolling 1s because that's what Nurglings do. And then I'm doing 2 damage on a roll of a 5 and 3 damage on a roll of a 6.
That is
so. Do you know all I could hear there from TJ? It was TJ. I could just remembering TJ talking about Chaos Cultists at the start of 8th edition and how you can make them double shoot with Slaanesh and they can get X amount of attacks and they can shoot twice and they get Veterans of the Longbow and all these things. It's just like, wow, this is just.
That's what it's all, does, though, right?
You yeah, gotta, it's all gotta, come full circle.
Yeah, it's in the rabbit. You got to go all the way into the rabbit hole, man, when you want to play Chaos. That's why I like Chaos so much. I mean, I love being able to do all these crazy things and, you know, get these combos off and do things.
It's good to talk about the bad guys.
It's always fun to talk about the bad guys. So, yeah, so that rolling looks something like 6, 4 wounds, 4, 5 wounds, which are 2 damage each, and then 6, 5 to 6, 3 damage rolls. And average on just the 3 damage rolls, you should roll 1, 1, 1, 2, because they only have a 3-up save. That's 2 dead aggressors right there before any other rolling.
Yeah, losing aggressors to Nurglings, that's no bueno. That's
I'm imagining bad. The look on that
he
player's
was
face.
Very upset. He asked me how many points that unit was, and like they're 124
points.
It's
like 40.
Yeah, it was a thing, you know. It was pretty gnarly. But yeah, so that's kind of the list kind of combos really well. It's very synergistic. It's extremely difficult to remove from the field. Yeah, and it plays really fun.
I haven't played with a Great Unclean one in this edition yet, but that's I mean, I love the model.
I mean, the look on your opponent's face when you move like 13 inches and then charge afterwards is priceless. You're like, oh, I move 8 inches. Oh, cool. I rolled like a 5 on my run. And they're thinking like, okay, well, I guess he's close to me. That's not so bad. And you're like, okay, cool. In the charge phase, I'll charge. And you're like, wait, what? Explain this to me again. I'm like, oh, this guy right here who literally serves no other purpose, he allows these guys to advance and charge. And then, yeah, when he gets into combat, he just does a whole bunch of shenanigans.
So, wait, what allows him to advance and charge?
Oh, the Piper.
Oh, the Piper. Okay. Have you ever thought about doing the same thing with the, I guess, the Feces Tree?
The problem like a with better word. Is that it has to start in your deployment zone, or it has to come down on turn 2. And since it comes down on turn 2, your opponent, you don't start within range at the start of your turn, which means he doesn't get to advance and charge at turn 3, and that's too late.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. 5-turn game, yeah.
Yeah, 5-turn game. Honestly, though, like with this guy, like you're basically always going to get a second turn charge off. Mm-hmm. So him with the second turn charge is hilarious because he's just in your opponent's face. They have to deal with this guy. Then you make him -1 to hit with a spell, you know, like he can do a whole bunch of funny stuff. And he's 18 wounds. So like, good luck.
No, he seems super difficult to deal with and fun to use.
Yeah,
well, I think a lot of people are already over the semi-unkillable Lord of Change. So he feels like a nice medium. He's just as unkillable, but people will look at him being like, oh, he's 18 wounds, he can't hide. You know, he's not, he doesn't just stand there and smite me. He comes and smashes my face.
Just going to fire a couple of last cannons at him. It'd be fine.
It'd be fine. He's got your warp surge for a 4-up, and you're like, no.
Yeah. The four up feel no pain is very misleading, too, because, like, you say it, and, like, in the back of your head, you're like, yeah, but he only needs a 5-up pinball. But, like, yeah, but 4-up feel no pain means he's taking literally half of whatever the damage you're shooting at him is. And then you just heal him at the end of the beginning of your turn anyway, D3 wounds with the spell. It goes off on a 5. So
I'm ripping the arms off my Rodigus tonight.
yes. But I'm serious. And the cool thing about him, too, is, like you said, the factor, right? That's a stupid model. Like, that's not going to do anything on the table. And then all of a sudden, like, he was chasing down Wave Serpents who moved 16 inches. I ran all the way to his. So turn 1, I moved, advanced. And then turn 2, I moved, advanced. And I was out of range because it was long ways. And I guess, like I said, he almost doesn't get a turn two charge off, but that was another one where he didn't. And so turn three, he charges in, kills like five Dire Avengers, and they were like, oh, we need to get out of here because I'm on his side of the field. So the Wave Serpent goes the other way, and then he moves, advances, and he turbo boosts like into the middle of the field. So then I moved advance. At that point, I was moving 8 inches plus a D6, and then he made like a 8 or 9 inch charge, and he was like, I just moved 16 inches from this side of the field to the other side of the field. Like, you just caught me.
Don't you move 4 inches a turn? No, sorry. It's not the way this works anymore.
No, that's not the way he works anymore. But, like, you know, people were telling me, like, he's really slow. And I'm like, he's faster than my Terminators. I was running the Terminators on my list. The Terminators, they can move 8 inches if they get a warp time off. Like, he moves 7 inches plus a D6 without doing any additional strats or abilities. So, he's very fun to play.
So there's always been this weird perception with, especially I think with demons more than the others, but like if you, so let's say you just splash Nurgling, yeah, it's not so powerful. It's just literally you're just buying resilience. You're not buying speed or damage output or anything else. But the deeper you go, especially, and I'm going to say I point out Nurgle more than anybody else, the deeper you go into the Nurgle rabbit hole specifically, you start to overcome your speed restrictions. You start to overcome your damage restrictions. Naturally, unfortunately, the only thing you can't overcome is the fact you have no rend, really. But like your damage goes through the roof, your speed actually gets exponential, and your resilience actually just doubles down on top of each other. Like I think of things like obliterators with the cover from the feces tree and things like that.
It's a feculent narmal, by the way.
it's the feces. It's feculent. Yeah, it's the feces tree. I call it the poo tree. But
that's feces terrain, so that will be fun.
Yeah,
Depthar, we get some other weird. We're getting some other weird terrain piece that will have some ridiculous name on it too.
That looks neat.
Yeah, looks like a Nurgle furnace. But yeah, you're completely correct. Like when I built my LVO list, it was like, okay, well, I'm going to make the toughest army that can combo out pretty hard. And I think I talked about it on here, like how many synergies I piled into that list to make it work. But it was like, you know, with Death Guard plus, you know, I'm sorry, with Nurgle stuff, like Poxbringers plus one strength, so they can go all the way up to strength 7 or strength 8. And then they're doing double damage, so they can basically do like their one damage turns into 2 damage. Then they can do mortal wounds on a, you know, and that can get plus 1 because they can get vets. Because back then we could be like plus 3 wounds. So like you're doing mortal wounds and on 4s, 5s, and 6s. Like, so it's pretty crazy. Like, Nurgle's probably my favorite combo wise. Nurgle and probably Tzeentch. Slaanesh doesn't combo, which is unfortunately. And
I was about to say, it does feel like Slaanesh and Tzeentch get the better whack at the stick. Whereas Khorne, because what are you going to do to make Khorne not Khorne? You're going to give it, like, shooting? What? Nah, it's
not
a thing.
No guns.
Well, you're going to give it a psychic phase? You can't. There are so many more limiting factors on Khorne than anything else.
Oh, come on. But,
I'm about to say, yeah, I know what you're trying to do now.
You know what I mean.
They only have one trick now that ninth edition's out, and that trick is deep strike the models that matter and hope that you make your charge. That's how Khorne works now. You can't stay on the table. You just get shot off the table. So I am going to bring a Khorne list to probably my next event because I think that's what the fans voted on. I put a post up and I was like, I'll take anybody, you know, any of these four gods, you let me know. I'll make a mono list. And like Khorne, originally it was Slaanesh. And I was like, you guys, like everybody plays Keeper Spam right now. Like everybody's playing Keeper Rush. You guys do want to see something different? Like, I feel like if I was an aspiring Chaos player, I'd want to see someone run something that's not one of those lists. Mm. But thankfully, I think Khorne has started to take over now. So I think that it's going to be Khorne.
So what's the plan? It's like deep striking bloodletters all over the place?
All right. So this is some secret tech. Don't tell anybody about this.
No problem.
We're going to run Scarbrand. We're going to deep strike Scarbrand in.
Okay, keep going.
Scarbrand is for immune to morale, plus 1 attack. And if he makes the charge, he can lock things up and they get the 3d6 fallback. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's Scarbrand. So Scarbrand, we spent 2 CP. You want to follow the CP here because it gets a little bad. So you spend 2 CP to deep strike him in, and then you take an Exalted Bloodthirster, you make him the Warlord, and then you give him the Blood Talisman, which allows him to regain wounds every time he kills a model on a 4+ or 5+. I can't remember what. I think it's 5+. On a 5+, he regains a wound of a model he kills, and then you give him Oblivious to Pain Warlord trait, which gives him the 6+ Final Pain, and if he makes a save, he gets full rerolls and turning charges. So that's that guy.
And you take an and you roll randomly on the chart because the Thirsters have the best chart in the book. Thirsters, Slaanesh, Zeech, and then Nurgle's last, unfortunately. Yeah, so you roll randomly on the chart for that guy, and then you take a second Bloodthirster because, yeah, and you do the exact same thing. You give him Exalted, and you Deep Strike him. So now you've spent 2 for Scarbrand, 3 for the Bloodthirster, who's Exalted, and then 3 for the other Bloodthirster, who's also Exalted, which brings your total up to 8 CP is what you've already spent. We go further. Now we take 30 letters with obviously the banner to give them an 8-inch charge off the rip, and then you give them the banners for the morale checks, and then the horn is for the +1 of the charge. So that's a 30.
You mentioned you spent 8 pre-game CP.
I did not say that. I said we're up to 8.
Oh, okay.
There's more.
I wish you'd stop there because I was like, I could feel red perk up.
We're spent still 8 going.
Pre-game, you know, desire to corn intensifies.
Yeah. Right. So then we spend. So then we spend 2 CP to put them in reserves. So now we're up to 10 CP, and then we take another 30 man, and we do the exact same thing, and then we put them in reserve as well. So we start the game with 0 CP
because that's
corn doesn't need. We don't need that stuff. That's
right.
That's for other races that don't want to main burn.
Never not made a charge.
Yeah, it's happened.
88% I mean,
the best Exalted one is probably the +2 of the charge, but the other traits are really good. So as much as I want to just give one of those guys that, we'll just roll randomly and hope that they both get it, right? That's how that works.
Yep.
So then we, plus they get to reroll their charges anyway because of Korn. That's what Korn lets them do. So then we take 10 blood letters who start on the field, and then we take 2 units of Furies with the Mark of Korn so that they can grab objectives, or depending on the matchup, if I'm going first, or depending on what the terrain looks like, we can take banners with those guys because they can actually put banners down. And then we take 3 giant Chaos Spawns.
Whew. Explain.
Giant Chaos Spawns? Like what they do, or why they're in the list?
Why they're in the list. I thought they had like one of the biggest drop-offs, and like they're now into obscurity through the nerfs.
You talking about the giant Chaos Spawns from Forge World?
Yeah, they just have one nerf. They just went up in points. They're just expensive. But like when you think about corn units that are going to be playable. So we tried the letter bomb. I'm sorry, we tried the Crusher Bomb. The Crusher Bomb is probably the most disappointing, sad thing you've ever seen. I have some of the most gorgeous painted blood crushers, and they'll never see the light of day. Like
what lets you down? I mean, they just die. They kill fine, but they just don't live for their points.
No, they don't kill fine. That's the problem. So the problem with the problem with the crusher is that they have a -3 attack, which bloodletters already have. They don't have any multi damage unless you roll a 6 to wound, and then they're 50 points a model.
Yeah, that's my real hang up with them is 50 points a model.
So what happens is you make a charge against some unit, and then your opponent just shoots at them, and all you have is a 4-up armor, and then you spent all your CP before the game begins. Even if you didn't spend all your CP before the game begins, you're going to want to invul up one of the crushers. One of the thirsters, not the crushers. So then the crushers just get shot to because that's what they do.
I love this. Everybody, TJ swearing more than I am, guys. Mark it in your calendar.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Mark it down.
I apologize.
It's the blood. We're talking about corn. The blood is up.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's a great list. I think you're going to have fun with it, right? It's very much so. I think that the principle is always 88% of the time, you're always going to make that charge, right? And then, the one I've been looking at, I like the Scarbrand one a lot. I have 6 Bloodthirsters in mine with 80 blood letters, and it's very much so just the, well, of course, I'm going to make a charge at some point. So
how are you fitting the 6 Bloodthirsters?
So I've got, I think it's 3 Insensate Rage.
Oh, you took the other ones. Yeah. So the Giant Chaos Spawns, like, I think they're going to be awesome because 10 wounds sounds pretty cool on the table.
Yeah, they're great.
They move really fast. I mean, it's basically 8 plus D6 every turn for their movement, and they can advance. So, like, the reason why they're on the table is, like, they're a nice source of D3 damage. They have a 4-up save built in, which is really nice. And they're tough as 5. So that's good too.
Well, maybe the terrain rules benefit them too. I mean, they're a pretty obnoxiously large model.
Well, every time they roll a 1 or a 6, they heal D3 wounds.
Yeah, but I'm still till 10 wounds and just an invul is not anything to, not that difficult to get through when everything has open range to see them. And before this whole 5-inch obscure terrain,
they
would be seen
that's
a
why,
lot.
That's why they kind of stepped off obscurity. Before, you could have given them a feel no pain if they were thousands, sorry, if they were Zeench, you give them a 4-up invul. Khorne just gives them +1 attack, +1 strength on the charge. But they only get shot for the first turn. And then your opponent's like, I have bigger fish to fry here. I've got 60 letters in my face and three big baddies in my face. Like, I need to deal with this. Well, by the time they deal with that, one, if not two of them, is basically coming up there and smashing face. And by that point, he's probably like 13 or 14 wounds already. So it's like another one, because they can heal past their starting number. So they can go all the way up to 20 wounds, which is just hilarious. But yeah, so I'm excited to play those guys again and see what they feel like. But I have been told that I'm going to bring this to an RTT, and we're going to win that RTT. So
here's see how it works out. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about Chaos, and then we'll have a hobby segment.
All right.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. Still got Adam and Red.
Yep. Hey.
And Mr. TJ.
Hey, I am here.
I know we got super deep into the rabbit holes of these CPs do this, neg ones, 2 damage, or whatever. But look, sometimes you just got to let it flow.
It's right. When you bring on a denizen of the warp, you don't try and tell him and give him constraints. You just like, let him loose.
Feverishly scratch it down.
Right? Yeah. I mean, that's the coolest thing about, you know, like when you bring on the guy who talks about Eldar, the guy who talks about Tau, it's pretty like compact, right? But I think the two biggest and even like the Imperium side, like your Space Marines basically run one detachment, or they're running 2 detachments at the very most, and it's usually that second detachment is basically the first detachment. Like, it's just a little, you know, it's like White Scars with White Scars, or maybe Iron Hands with White Scars. But like Chaos is like, all right, man, I took Death Guard. I got some demons. I've got some Chaos Space Marines. I'm messing around with those guys. And, and I got some Thousand Suns maybe. So like, there's so much synergy that you have to look at when you're trying to build a list. So
We're talking about, I mean, it kills Space Marines, and that's, you know, we've talked a lot about Space Marines because there's been a lot to talk about, but the things we're discussing now are stuff that it's good at battling Space Marines. And so if you are a player of these factions and struggling or whatever, maybe get something from it, or you'll know what to watch out for, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing. And I hate it that, you know, we give advice on how to kill Space Marines, and that also happens to work on Blood Angels.
Yeah. That's all right. Reset the clock.
Reset the clock. Yeah, we got there. Yeah.
Look, I got to play him this past weekend, man. Well, now I've got the blood up, you know, for I want to talk about him. I won't right now, though. I'll wait at least 1 week.
We were worried.
TJ, so it's like I try to keep my finger to the pulse of a lot of different super factions, I guess. And the Chaos one just seems to be Nurgling's Greater Demons. Chaos Space Marines don't seem to be getting a look in at all. Is there a reason for that, or are they just being kind of pushed to the side a bit? Is there anything there we're not talking about, not in the conversation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Alpha Legion's still good. The problem with Alpha Legion is, like, before you got your CP from making detachments, so you could get enough detachments and get enough CP in that to basically run your, I'm going to block this unit behind this unit and basically hang out, you're possessed. But they took a major whopping when the new edition came out. I mean, multi-charges hurt. Chaos Space Marines love to charge a whole bunch of stuff and kill a bunch of stuff when they attack twice or shoot twice, you know, charge twice, wrap things and all that fun stuff. And then they took another hit with CP. So, I mean, now you start with 12, and if you're running your Chaos Space Marine attachment, that's free, but then you're going to spend 3 CP to basically take your second one. And unfortunately, the thing about Chaos Space Marines is they don't have – they're lacking in a lot of areas, and they shore up with Chaos because they're really good, a good synergistic army. So they shore up really well with like Demons or Death Guard or Thousand Suns. So then you're spending CP to bring that stuff in, and then an extra relic here, an extra Ruler trait here. And then you start the game with like 6 CP, and you're like, where did my CP go? And then your Obliterators from your Chaos Space Marines come in.
and they spend five of them on one turn, and you're like, oh, that's where they all landed. Okay, cool.
But you're really going to kill that that one unit, maybe two.
Yeah. So with that, like Alpha Legion can still do, you can still screen blocker units with their ability. And Nurglings are a great way to basically make that strat still happen. So basically it's the closest unit can, it can only be targeted unless it's the closest unit. So you put Nurglings in front of them or something big, like back when I used to play was Plaguebrush Crawlers and, you know, Beasts and Nurgle and Nurglings and things like that. And then they'd have to spend their whole turn shooting stuff that I didn't want them to shoot. So that's cool. That's still alive and well. Unfortunately, like I said, like the CP just hurts. It's a 2 CP strat. It's expensive. Very expensive. Iron Warriors have some really cool abilities. So Iron Warriors are basically like, they take Obliterators to the next level. They make Obliterators much more dependable because unfortunately Obliterators are not dependable. I didn't say that, but I meant it. So,
they're very streaky is what it seems like to me, unless you are playing them Slaanesh or whatever. So it's seeing them in any other.
Yeah. So, I mean, like the problem with them is like, they just, and I think it's the same problem that a lot of the people that I've learned from and who kind of taught me like how to value units. Like when I was learning how to play this game, like Andrew Gagneau and like Nick Nonavati were like two of the biggest people that I looked up to at the time. I was like, man, I want to be like, I want to know just as much as they know about stuff. And they both dislike those units heavily. And like, when we got into talking about it, they're like, basically like, they just don't, they're random. Which I get the chaos is random, but they're too random for how many points they are. And when you spend 4 or 5 CP, you better be doing a lot. Like, I know right now Harlequins can basically spend 5 CP, but then they kill everything they touch. Like, that's not what these guys do. So, but they got better as Iron Warriors. So basically Iron Warriors, they have Methodical Annihilation. So what it does is it allows them, you can reroll the damage roll. And you can reroll the dice to determine the type of the weapons that they're equipped with. So basically, with that strat, you're able to reroll the dice to determine the AP, the strength, and the damage loadout with that stuff. However, a reroll is a reroll. So when you reroll it and you roll a 1, and then you reroll it into a 1, that's unfortunately...
Hey, don't put that evil on me.
Yeah, so yeah,
you're playing with the same metrics. You haven't changed the goalposts.
Unfortunately, that's one of the issues with that list is there's no way to like buff it. Then they have Tank Hunters, which is another cool ability. Basically, allows them to reroll the wound rolls against the vehicle. So that's cool. Makes things die. I mean, and then with the Iron War strats, they have another strat which is called Cannon Fodder, which is basically like Alpha Legions but a little different. And what that does is it allows you to select one unit of infantry from your army, which would be your Obliterators, and then you can put friendly cultists that are wholly within 6 of those units. Basically, they have to shoot the cultists first before they can target that. So they'll spend an entire turn with all their good shooting cultists that don't matter. So it's cool. Very cool.
Do the Iron Warriors have the relic that give the 2+ armor save as well? Like, I know that's spread around.
They have the relic that gives, yes. They also have the relic that gives them fearless models as well.
Mm.
So they can make all their cultists fearless.
Yeah, and is it the 6-up feel no pain, or they always have that?
Cultists don't have it anymore because cultists are but mere mortals. But
yes.
They are but mere
mortals. Their flesh is weak.
Their flesh is so weak. But yeah, you can buff them by giving them some other abilities. The cool thing about Iron Warriors is they have no marks, like inherent marks. Like obviously Emperor's Children have to be Emperor's Children. They have to be Slaanesh, but, Iron Warriors can do whatever they want. So you can make them Tzeentch, give them a 5-up invul, which makes cultists obviously infinitely more difficult to kill. You can make them Slaanesh and give them a 5+ feel no pain, which is really cool. Or I guess if you really wanted to, you can make them Nurgle. I don't know why you would, but you make a -1 to hit, which isn't the worst thing, but. So you can do some cool stuff with that strat, those strats coupled together.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking of Iron Within, is that 6-up feel no pain. That's another strat they get now.
Yeah.
Which is basically on a 6, they don't take that wound. So that's a cool strat as well. But again, like we get into this, right? And I just mentioned, what, 4 strats on that unit? That's 4 strats in a turn that cost you 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah. 5 CP, basically, you just spent. And you haven't even fired twice, and now you spend 7. And then you're going to vet them. That's 8 CP on that unit.
Yeah, and if you're spending that many CP, You should have removed all chance of whatever you're shooting at surviving. And you still haven't. You actually haven't.
You definitely haven't. So that's the issue with that unit. But they are good. They are strong. A lot of people that I talk to who are on the other side of the fence, it's interesting who you talk to, but it's such a divided topic because there are people who are like, no, man, they're great. I've never had a problem with them. I'm like, then you are lucky, man, because I have, definitely. So those guys are good. Emperor's Trolls are really good. They have
With the Iron Wars, there's the Siege Lords. I mean, that's their special rule, if I'm remembering it right, that lets them ignore when they're shooting, the enemy does not get the benefit of cover.
To their saving throw, specifically.
Yeah, to the saving throw, yeah.
Yeah, their saving throw. So, I mean, that's cool, but again, like, in this game, vehicles don't even get it, and what you should really be shooting those guys at is vehicles. Because they're supposed to be the tank killers. They're supposed to, like, Obliterator specifically should kill all the things. But then you run into a lot of issues if you're not shooting vehicles, like transhuman physiology, like the most annoying strat that they've ever created. And I want to take, you know how I said that other guy needs a medal? Whoever made this strat should go outside and he should, let me know who his name is.
It's so good. And you can just use it all the time. And it's such a...
It's insane.
It's such a dagger.
And then they give it to Custodes, and they made it even worse because they're like, all right, how about if you get no rerolls and I minus your strength and I do it? Okay, well, that unit's just not dying. Whatever I just shot at it, it's just not going to die. So, but they're very – Chaos has always been CP intensive. I think that's why they're kind of on the back burner, like Amseth. Like, they're just in a rough spot right now because, like, they're such a CP intensive army. And none of what I just said – you can't not do, because the chances, like you said, the chances of you messing it up and not killing what you're trying to shoot is really not cool.
There's been a bit of a fundamental shift in the metrics of gaining CP and things like that. We need to take single or less detachments to get more CP, whereas Chaos is structured around using multiple detachments from different forces to get the best of all worlds, yeah?
Right, which is something I've said early on, like when you remade 9th edition and fundamentally changed the way the game is played, certain armies are not adapted to play the game like you have designed them, and that might change when they rewrite the books, or they could completely flub it. Who knows? Well, time will definitely tell, but Chaos is definitely one of them. Demons is another one. I mean, that list I just said before is Corn. It starts with zero CP. That's mono. That's mono Corn. I didn't even take any detachments. I still need to spend all the CP to make that list even work, because running across the table with a 16 wound model that has a 5 of Imbol isn't and a 6 toughness 7 isn't going to go well. That's not going to end well for anybody.
So, but when we've talked a little bit negatively for a bit, but when we talked about negative about obliterators, the same conversation, you just change obliterators for Havocs, all of a sudden they sound amazing, especially with what we might assume is some more durability in the form of wounds.
Two wound Havocs in a Rhino does not
seems just, or a Termite.
Seems not bad at all. They don't seem terrible. I mean, so I'm definitely interested to see. My main concern with this new thing is like points. I need to see what that looks like. What is the cost? There's a great song by Sabaton. It's what is the cost of a mile? The price of a mile? This is what I want to see. The price of a wound. That's what I want to see. What is the price of a wound? How much are these things going to go up? What are they going to effectively be worth now? Because if you remember, back in 6th edition, 7th edition, Rubric Marines were like 27 points a model. And they were completely unplayable. They were before their book came out, before they got a Thousand Suns book, back when like Wrath of Magnus was the first book that came out for them and they got their own stuff. They were like 20, 27 points a model. And then Nurgle was like, I think 22 points a model for a Plague Marine before they got their Death Guard book in 8th edition. So, and they were unplayable as well. So I'm interested to see what that looks like, because right now we're dangerously close to 20 points a model for a Plague Marine. And now we're going to get a wound on us? That's, we'll see. I'm interested to see. But,
well,
so...
I mean, you say that. Would you say 20 points a wound is too much for a Plague Marine when an Intercessor is 20 points a wound? And essentially that same price point, 10 points per price point for the Plague Marine, you get essentially a worse gun, but you get better toughness and a feel no pain, maybe.
Right, but I don't get chapter tactics so far. I don't get chapter tactics. My Legion trait is basically worthless. My Legion trait is my feel no pain.
Look,
so I mean,
stop being a heretic and all your problems will be solved.
Get on the Selenium stat wagon.
We don't understand how to reroll my morale. I'm just a spineless coward, apparently. So, like, I can't reroll my morale. So there are some, like, some big things you pay for. And I get that argument a lot when I talk to people about it. They're like, well, you know, 20 points for an intercessor. You're trying to tell me plus one toughness, plus one wind isn't good. I'm like, yeah, but my bolter, I also don't do four attacks when I charge. I also don't get chapter tactics. I have a bolter that's AP
doctrines. Yeah.
Or doctrines, or rerolling my morale checks. I'm also leadership 7 with my guys. Leadership 7 hurts a lot.
Well, you want to be Nurgle, you know. You roll in, baby. Yeah. You gotta take squads of 7. You gotta take 7 of them in 7 rhinos, and they're gonna be worth 17 points each, right? But they're not.
That's fine with me. They're not gonna be 17 points.
They're not gonna be 17. No, no way.
We shall see. I don't want to speculate too much on this. So if I can, I want to jump to a hobby segment. So I mentioned in the new White Dwarf, or the most, I don't know if it's the new one, the most recent one. Mine came a little bit late this time. There's many different hobby sections in here, and there's a whole couple of pages on bases. And you know, look, if you're struggling, if you're like me and do the same old base for every single army you do because it's easy and you can do it and it looks good enough, you may be in like a bit of a rut. Explore some of these base tutorials because, you know, you could use them. You might get a dramatic look, a great look, a contrasting look, and it might not be that hard to do once you see somebody lay out the steps for you. So I highly suggest checking that out. But there's also a painting tutorial in here about two-tone demons. I think that, and me included, I've got a demon paint recipe. I know how I'm going to paint my pink horrors. I know how I'm going to paint my blood letters, so on and so forth. But getting a two-tone on them, almost kind of like they're reptilian. That's about the best way I can describe it. You know, like a belly of a lizard is a little bit lighter color than the top skin, like a snake or whatever. I mean, not paint a reptilian, but that two-tone contrast, I think really gives a very interesting table presence. And then this book, this magazine describes how to do it in a couple of different ways. And I think it's a way to differentiate. And the reason I mention it is because you may be able to squad mark your units, which is, to me, notoriously difficult for things that don't have shoulder pads or stuff that I can stick decals or different colors on.
I struggle with that quite often. So usually I do mine on base work. Like this guy has something different on his base, but obviously that gets a little difficult to like discern when you have like two big chunks of guys running around.
Base is a good way of doing it too. For my Sylvaneth, I have different color flowers on each of their base. You know, like this unit has purple and green. This one has orange and white, you know, that kind of stuff. But you know, we talk about it a way when you're playing, it's a way to communicate to your opponent, you know, that's, they don't know your paint scheme and how you lovingly crafted, you know that these have green eyes and you're the only one that sees that, or this has warplock bronze as their jewelry. And this one has Rune Lord brass, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's in the heat of the battle, you know, when you're picking up and removing models and counting which one has, is this one in coherency? Oh, he's part of this unit, not this unit, kind of thing. You want to communicate that kind of stuff. And so the hobby stuff goes beyond just the aesthetics. It's cool that it's aesthetic and always painted with standard that you are proud of, but it goes beyond that. It translates into a competitive thing as well, communicating with your opponents.
Absolutely.
But that's not exactly the hobby I wanted to talk about. I want to talk about when to remove mold lines. Does anybody want to take a guess when you should remove the mold lines?
Always and forever.
That's it. When you see them, you nailed it. I didn't expect the first answer to be the best answer, but is whenever you see it, that is when you should remove it. I see this a lot, like on in eBay salvage or something like that. Or I'll see someone post a picture on Twitter or Instagram, and they'll be like, look at my fabulous model. It could be, you know, it is. It's probably a beautiful model, but like the first thing is, oh, the mold lines are burning my eyes or whatever. And then once someone points out that there's a mold line on it, that's all anyone else is ever going to see.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You can never unsee that mold line.
Yeah, and so, you know, my buddy, he brought over some models for me to help him paint, and these are actually Star Wars Legion models, I know. Don't get mad at me. I'm not. The game has too many like tokens and stuff and cards, I think, for my taste. But whatever. He likes the models. It's rolling dice and doing stuff, and I certainly don't mind painting new things.
Yeah, well, don't be hobby shaming people.
That I don't. look, man, that's it. So he hands me this tank, and you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, like a cat bringing home a bird. Yeah,
he's right. He's built it. It's a tank. You have to be proud of it.
He's built it, and he is proud of it. It actually, it looks pretty cool. But the first thing I look at is like, oh, it's got these chunky spruce gabs and some mold lines on it. I absolutely have to clean those up. And then, of course, to make sure that I'm in the mud with him, I look over at a model I've already painted, and there's a mold line on a helmet that I didn't see before.
Oh.
You know what? There's only one thing to do here, and that is completely tear down that paint job on that helmet.
Right. Burn it down.
Clean up this tank. You know. Now, look, I know we're talking about degrees here of stuff, but I do think that as you get better at painting and go down that hobby journey, that the time to address those is, of course, when you're trying to build the model and clean it up. But sometimes you really don't see it until you get that coat of prime on it. So I think that realistically, you know, inspect your models at each stage. And so maybe you don't have to rip down a perfectly colored yellow helmet with yellows very hard to paint, but you should have noticed it, the mold line, when you put the shade on it. It shouldn't have taken this long. But, you know, you're moving fast or whatever. But I think it's worth still inspecting the model past the initial build to prevent that. And then don't be afraid that if you do notice it later on, like on a pouch or a boot or a, you know, I see them on leg greaves sometimes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah. You know, if something's got a bow, like the curve of the bow, you may not notice it because it was difficult to trim, you know, when you got your mold scraper or your blade, whatever you're using to do it. But I do think that the time to do it is exactly when you notice it. And hopefully, you know, if you take nothing from this conversation, try to notice it earlier. Well, I don't know if you guys have those similar experiences.
Absolutely have had those experiences. I've actually rebased. So I had a model who had, this is years ago, but I had a model who I found had a really, really, really bad mold line. As a one of my Black Templars from 30K, actually. It was a Forgeworld model. And with some Forgeworld models, usually they're good. And when they're good, they're very good. And when they're bad, they're really bad. If that makes sense. The miscasts on some of the Forgeworld, the really old Forgeworld models.
This was the resins and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, this is a Mark II resin leg. It was pretty funky. And what I did was I snipped the guy's leg and put him walking in a swamp instead of scraping off all the paint and repainting it, because I knew it would look completely different. Because the paint job was like 3 years old, man. There's no way the paints were going to match up again. They age. So I was just like, you know what? This guy is now walking in a swamp. Clip the leg, file it down. He's in the swamp. And I was just like, yep, okay, I can sleep now. I can go back to bed.
Get him a bionic leg.
This is horrible.
I have actually, going through rebasing of an army, pulled the foot off an old, you know, a third edition Marine. Mm. Like, you know what would go well right there? A Necron foot. This dude's now bionic. Stuck it on there.
It happens to me. Like, especially humans, because we have 25
buildings. It is snowing at my house. It is 1:20 in the afternoon in spring in Ballarat, and it is snowing outside. Sorry, I've just never seen that.
No.
I might have to bail and go frolic in the snow.
I bet, dude. Hang in here for a few more minutes, and then go frolic.
I'll put up pictures of me frolicking in the snow for those at home.
Better happen.
The mold lines. It is a bit of a crisis.
It is. Where the crisis is people not learning about it and not learning how to do it well early on in their hobby career and their hobby life.
Well, I think
I've seen entire 2,000-point armies, and I'm like,
same.
Do you know mold lines? Same. And they're like, mold what? I'm like, please.
Yes.
Let me have those.
But and the thing is, you know, as soon as you point it out to them, you're going to ruin their whole army for it.
See, that's why you don't. Devastated. Yeah, you don't do it. This is about personal policing, not policing someone else. I'm not a fan of those comments where people are like, "Oh, the mold lines." I mean, I think it must be a copy and paste of the mold lines are burning my eyes or whatever. Like,
you said you took your friend's tank and you immediately you fixed that, didn't you?
I did, yeah, because I have to paint it, and so I have to, then I'm going to post pictures on my own Instagram about, and that's what they're going to say, like, Paul, you suck at mold lines, like, but I didn't build it.
So it wasn't painted when you got it.
The helmet that I did was painted. I missed a mold line, and I have to or I did strip down a helmet and had to redo it.
See, I like the friends who are going to call me out, and that's definitely something I want them to call me out on. Be like, "Hey, bro, that looks really gorgeous. It's especially that painted in mold line.
Oh, yeah, did you ink that yourself?
Man, I custom put that mold line in there. Thanks.
You perfectly shaded. Look, man, I get it. When the sepia or the Agrax like just really hugs that line and it's super tight and you don't want to. Yeah. It's the best it's ever been. You don't want to strip it off, but you got to.
Oh yeah, no, it has to happen.
I like the bionic leg or the bionic arm idea. That's actually a pretty good idea.
Oh yeah, well that's one of those things. Like, I can't believe I just snapped his foot off, and I have a tournament because I would never do this work in the past, and except the day before a tournament. So,
is there another time that you do models?
That's a good point. It's actually we haven't revisited this, and maybe as we eventually get to where we can go to more tournaments or whatever, you know, those are reasons to do hobby, you know, like for points, you know, there's like, yeah, I want those points. So I want to make sure that I, you know, my bases have three elements on them or whatever the criteria was. And so I would look at the rubric the night before and okay, I have to go and put squad markings on 10 Marines. Yeah. Let's go do it.
Like, I won best overall at LVO this year. I didn't even realize that I was in the running for best overall. And when they called my name, I thought it was just like something for chaos. And I walk up and hands me this huge trophy. And I'm like, what's this? And he's like, oh, this is best overall first place. I'm like, what? Okay. I'm finally here. I'm here, boys. I painted my army well. I did it. But that was always the thing for me. Like, I'm definitely one of those guys who's like, all right, make sure we check all the boxes, make sure everything looks nice, make sure all your stuff is, you know, I'm very like, you know, like you got to do all these things, make sure your stuff is cool. So I'm definitely there with you guys that like, you have to, you know, when you go into an event, you got to make sure that there's no stone left unturned the night before.
Well, for years, that's what I would do. I would paint just for points. I mean, now look, I had a desire to get better, but you know, I don't have a lot of innate talent when it comes to painting miniatures. It's all learned stuff, techniques, products. You know, it's all that. I'm very proud of what I do and what I've started doing, and I do think my stuff looks good. So this is not like a, you know, a pity party or whatever. I'm saying that for years I just painted for points because I knew I was not going to win a best painted or anything like that. And now thankfully all the tutorials, all the products, you know, and that kind of stuff are hopefully making people better. And then, but you still need that motivation. And I still have to paint for a good list or something I feel good running. And then maybe once or twice a year, I'll paint what I call a vanity piece, something that just I want to do.
Oh yeah, I know those pieces. Those are the fun ones.
And it could be a squad, could be a unit, could be a tank or whatever. Often it's just a character model. Like, oh, I really want a character model with the specific set of war gear that doesn't get taken very often because it looks neat. Although, over the past weekend, and I'm going to talk about Blood Angels for a second.
Oh,
somebody mentioned that I might want to consider a captain with lightning claws. And you don't know how long it's been since I've put a character on the table with lightning claws. I'm like, you know what? Some new lightning claws with my current like painting ability might be pretty cool.
Well, because now it was just like, does he have the Thunderhammer and Storm Shield or just the Thunderhammer? It was, yeah.
Watch out. You heard it here. Well, actually, maybe not first, but lightning claws.
Nope, first.
Might be a thing.
I hope so. I hope some more of those other weapons come back into vogue. I mean, I'd be happy for. I mean, remember when power axes were literally the bee's knees in the end of 7th edition?
Yeah.
Like, TJ, you'd know for sure. Like, you'd have your three or four sorcerers in a cabal, and you'd have one fist if you needed to ID somebody, and everything else would be an axe, yeah?
Yep, axes were great back then. Remember frost axes?
Yeah, oh, dude, they were off their guts. They were so
obnoxious.
Good.
Obnoxious.
Yeah, they were awesome.
Obnoxious. That was another thing. Back in the day, I would use power axes instead of power swords because I thought they looked more aggressive. And they didn't have different rules. They were just power weapon.
I'm trying to think, like, back in the day. I mean, you're sitting here talking about, like, 5 years ago, right?
The day for me is a little bit longer than that.
Yeah, like, probably, like, 7 years at this point. I mean, 8th edition was 3 years, or already, or 8th edition was 4 years. So 8th edition was 4 years. So, yeah, you're right, probably about 5 years ago.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, it's okay. Thanks for making us all feel.
No problem.
Well, gentlemen, this has been a really great talk about chaos and stuff. And again, I like talking about the bad guys. And TJ, I appreciate you taking time out of your night
to
join us.
Man, I hate talking about the bad guys. I can't wait to go back to it. No.
We'll bring you on to talk about Eldar next week.
Oh, please don't.
So next week, I may not be able to release an episode next week, but I might. And I'm not leaving this. So, but if there's nothing, if we're not able to put something together next week due to schedules, they will be definitely coming the week after that, but I'm going to try to get something out. We'll see how it goes. Folks, again, really appreciate you hanging in here with us and joining us. And I know we got super deep and heavy into the points and the combos and stuff, but that's what it takes to make some of these factions work.
Yeah, we're not everybody can be Space Marines.
Yeah, but see, I'm happy that it exists. I actually like that level of depth, and there has to be a word, the figured outness of this. Yeah,
I get what you mean. I like that there are different dynamics to how things work. But I do like that you still get rewarded. Like, even with things that are harder to puzzles to put together. Like TJ said before, the deeper you go down the rabbit hole, the full commitment you put into it, you still get the payout at the end. You could, like, I'm of the opinion that right now, or at least in the last 6 to 9 months of Space Marines, you could just throw a dart at a bunch of randomly pinned data sheets on a wall, and you'd make a viable list. You can't say the same for Chaos. You can't say the same for Tyranids. But the thing is, if you put the work in, you can still get the results.
Oh, yeah. If you know your army, knows exactly what it does. I'm still under the impression that you can win any game, especially against someone who is basically used to just winning games because they're playing Space Marines. Not to discredit any Space Marine player who plays very well.
But there's an inherent lack of
I won't say lack of skill, but lack of like depth in their models. They're very straightforward. They do a whole ton of damage. They have a lot of survivability. There's just not a lot of synergy that you have to worry about with that. So,
yeah, it's very linear, isn't it?
I also don't mind that because power armor, you know, it fell off for a long time. Like, it did nothing, man. And now it's back in a great way.
Had 3 years in the 9th edition where it was literally a joke.
I do hope the other factions bubble up, and I think maybe we'll see it. But yeah, again, thank you all for joining me, and yeah, we'll be back very soon. Let's do a back episode. I don't know. We'll see. All right, see you guys.
See ya.
Make my day.